because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws, too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people try to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing wind. Taking your rights to self-defense. They say you're safe, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when you see real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tap, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Now, for those of you who are indeed listening live, you have seen that I'm already running a smidge behind. I actually tried leaving Kel's show about 5 minutes before she was done, and it is now officially 11 minutes after the hour. Evidently, my computer really didn't want to log on and stay connected with this new stuff going on at the BTR platform. And show of hands, guys, I see that Kel and Chief from Simple Facts of Life are both already hanging out in the chat room. What's the deal with this new chat room? How are you guys liking this so far? Because I got to tell you, I think I kind of preferred the old one. It's good that I can now see from the home screen much easier. I don't necessarily have to sneak and peek around. Of course, it still will be an issue if I'm trying to do various other things. But hey, what have you. I actually have some issues actually seeing everybody who's in the way this is. Very cluttered. I do not like it so far. But welcome to the show. Glad to have you guys here. Our science advisor just popped in too, so welcome into the chat room, our science advisor. All right, so taking a quick look at today's show. Okay, so our science advisor is actually COG. Okay, and did you still want me to join you on Sunday? Or have you come to yourself? Chief, the invitation is open. I would very much like for you to, but it is strictly up to you, sir. You are more than welcome to join me Sunday. I would like very much to continue having our Sunday afternoon conversation, sir. But, that's you. Kel's saying that I call it the crap chat. So far, I got to agree with you. I've got to agree with you. Okay. So today, scheduled to be joined by Mr. Kendall. That's Clark Kendall, founder of Kendall Capital and author of the upcoming book, Middle Class Millionaire, surprisingly simple strategies to grow and enjoy your wealth. I do hope they are surprisingly simple and don't require a great deal of money to begin that climb. I'll be looking forward to that conversation. Obviously, there is a story that I would like to discuss that I put in the description today, the show description, involving a certain amendment that was offered to Ohio's heartbeat bill. And needless to say, I was not a particular fan of it, but we will discuss that here in a moment. Before all that, this is the first time I have been able to get on air since the fire at Notre Dame. Now, I would like to say a few simple things. Not being Catholic, I don't have a religious connection to the cathedral. I don't have a religious connection to that church other than the fact that it is still a Christian church. But to me, Notre Dame, it's a landmark for more than just religious reasons. It is literally a linchpin to the advancement of Western civilization. It is literally a placeholder, a touchstone, if you will, for the entirety of our civilization. Layers were built on top as advancements were made. The role that the church played through our history is one that is unique. Now, obviously, there are people out there that are not fans of the Christian church. There are people out there that are not fans of Western civilization at all. And you know who you are. But regardless of whether you have this fandom, it doesn't change the fact that so much more than just a church was burning. Obviously, due to the nature of events that have been going on in Christian churches, particularly Catholic churches around the world, and especially in France over the course of the last few weeks, the huge influx of Muslims, it was only natural that there would be at least some speculation that it could have been a terrorist event. In fact, it would be almost irresponsible not to acknowledge that there were good reasons for that speculation. But here's something that occurred to me, that frightened me in a way that I have not felt. Not recently, certainly not very often. I don't know how much of the coverage you guys saw, but I saw footage. I saw footage from Fox News. I saw footage from CNN. I saw footage from MSNBC, and I saw a lot of the same thing happening time and time again. I saw them calling people, having them on the phone or via Skype or having camera feeds. I saw these things. And as soon as someone would mention the possibility of terrorism, as soon as it was clear that was the direction that they were going with the conversation, they were cut off immediately. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I have grown accustomed to the lack of journalism. And I suppose real journalism would avoid speculation at all costs. It's too important of a story to get it wrong. There's no reason to speculate on air. I get that. I can understand that. But at that point in time, just talking about the working narrative that this was an event that was most likely due to an accident, most likely due to renovations that were going on, Well, that's a reasonable explanation, and certainly something that I would hope to be true. That, too, was speculation at the time, and still very well may be. But in this country, we have all grown rather accustomed to speculation. And here's what I'm used to seeing on a story of this nature. All right, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we're here on the ground and we're seeing this horrific sight going down before our very eyes. And some here on the ground are even going so far as to speculate the possibility of this being a terrorist attack. Obviously, it's far too soon to make any kind of determinations. And we certainly don't want to say, you know, that's the way we see and hear it. What's wrong with that? But they were cutting even that off. Just spoke to somebody recently who said they saw something suspicious. Normally, that moves to the front of the line. Not this time. And when I saw the same thing play out on multiple shows, on multiple networks, that concerned me. That raised my little red flag. That got my antennae up. That got me looking and wondering and thinking, is there something they might actually be hiding here? Here's what else I know. For some time now, churches in France have been desecrated and attacked, and primarily by Muslims, Islamists in particular. I know this is the beginning of the Holy Week, holiest week in the Christian calendar. We're working our way as fast as we can to Easter Sunday. I know such speculation has always been met in the past with the speculation gets made, and then either the person reporting it or the host of the show then intervenes and says, well, of course, it's certainly way too early to make those kind of assessments, and we should make sure that we don't jump to any conclusions. But we didn't get any of that. People were being cut off just like that. No, 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 you're not to mention it. I know Macron has not known how to accomplish a single goal except for the creation through his own leftist agenda of the Yellow Vest movement. I know that Macron and his administration have a vested interest in not letting the people of France believe for a second that this might have been an act of terrorism. Because those same Yellow Vest folks, along with a whole lot of other French who have every reason to be proud of their culture and the cultural significance that some place like Notre Dame plays in world history, they have every reason to take up angry actions should it be found out that this was, in fact, indeed, an act of terrorism. They have that vested interest. And I don't want to sit here and say that that is what happened here. But I do want to echo Kel earlier when she said that we will probably never know. Not for real. Because we can't trust whatever they're going to have to say. We can't trust if they tell us, no, this was just an accident. I've been praying since the beginning that that is, in fact, all this is. I was seeing news stories from semi-reputable sites hitting the internet last night. Checking in the chat room. Chief just shared an interesting photo. Just one more reason for you guys to come over and check it out. But Macron has invested it because things could get ugly really fast in France if it was determined that that was indeed the case. So we're probably not going to be told. We're probably not going to get to know the truth of what happened, if it was terrorism. They will probably ride this accident story as far as it'll take them. But to see these stories of people, I was reading a story, like I said, semi-reputable, because I don't want to mention the site particularly because the story got ripped down anyway, but they're pretty accurate, probably about 70% of the time, but they love the exaggerated headlines. They love the clickbait to draw you in, but they're usually about 70% right. So they got a much better accuracy rating than CNN does. I'll tell you that much. But they were reporting last night that vehicles were found nearby with gas cans and pro-ISIS propaganda in those vehicles close to the cathedral. And in fact, they were reporting that two individuals had been taken into custody at that point in time. And then within a matter of about an hour and a half, that story was gone, ripped down, just like several others. Any inclination whatsoever, anybody saying that terrorism was a possibility, was being silenced on Monday night. That, to me, says way more than any cover story ever could. And again, I want to reiterate the fact here. I'm not saying that this was an act of terrorism. I can't get to that fundamental conclusion. I don't have evidence on me. All I have is my spider sense tingling in the background telling me that something's not quite right here. But it's not even so much the fire that feels not right as much as it is this shutdown on the notion, the idea that we're not allowed to speak, that maybe, just maybe, something suspicious might have, maybe this wasn't an accident. I think we've come too far down the road at this point to not at least consider the possibility of terrorism, regardless of what the incident that just occurred happened to be. That's the world we live in now. We have to spend some time thinking about the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, there's a strong possibility that something bad might have happened and somebody might have just done it on purpose. That's a real possibility. I'm doing my Southern thing, in case you haven't noticed. Unbelievable. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to this story, but rest assured, I will get back to the Ohio bill tomorrow night if I don't. Kel's talking about Muslims online watching live feeds and using smiley face emojis. I mean, it's clear they're not happy with Western culture, and they're certainly not happy with anything that revolves around Christianity or Judaism. But like I said, Notre Dame represents so much more to Western civilization than just being such an iconic Catholic cathedral. It is so much more than that. And I am so happy that they were, in fact, able to rescue so many historical artifacts. Some of them saved in such a fashion that I don't think it's the least bit of an overstatement to say that it took a miracle. The rose window, that took a miracle. The hand of God in action right there. So many other things saved, rescued, so many things that were not damaged by the fire, but damaged by water in the process of trying to rescue. It was all there. And these things are presumably going to be restored, or at least restorable. And, you know, I certainly hope so. At any rate, I do not have enough time to do the Edwards Notebook and the Veterans Tip of the Day before placing the phone call here for today's guest. And it's going to feel really weird transitioning from this discussion to tonight's guest. But I am going to do a little bit of Matt Fitzgibbons while I make this phone call. And I'll try to be right back. So stay with me, guys. For staying with me through the break. It's always a blast when you guys hang out with me. And right now, it is in fact time to welcome to the show Mr. Kendall Capital. Clark Kendall. I'm getting ahead of myself. Clark Kendall, who is the founder of Kendall Capital, and that's why I was getting ahead of myself, as well as the author of the brand new book, Middle Class Millionaires. Clark, after I bungled all that, welcome to the show, and I hope you're having a good evening.
Tim, thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to be on your show. I appreciate you calling me.
All right. Well, the honor, of course, is mine. It's always great to get to speak to somebody who not only is an expert in their field, but takes the time to try and share the knowledge that they've acquired over the years to genuinely help people. And nobody needs any better help in the modern age than of the financial variety. So I've got a few specific questions about the tax law. You know, we just had tax day officially yesterday. That, of course, doesn't mean everybody is caught up. But before we kind of look at the current tax things that might still be an issue for some folks, I wanted to talk a little bit about the book, if we can start there. Middle Class
Sure.
Millionaire, Surprisingly Simple Strategies to Grow and Enjoy Your Wealth. First of all, we've still got a little ways out before it's officially available, right?
That's correct. It'll be out in early June, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. This is just a teaser to get people interested in and hopefully purchasing the book.
Right. Well, I think we're going to go out on a limb and say, based on the title, that you're really trying to help people figure out some simple things that might almost seem too simple, so you tend to overlook them. But I've always been told not to judge a book by its cover, and I found that to be true. So on the teasing side, what's some of the general information that you're looking to share out? Of course, can't give away too much.
No, that's fine. It's a book about basically how to become that middle-class millionaire. So how to take advantage of 529s, how to manage your debt, how to take advantage of retirement accounts. But then I've had 30 years experience in the business, and it's also some stories, experiences of dealing with clients with different situations and how they applied that and stuck to the underlying strategy of what they were trying to accomplish.
Well, you know, usually that kind of information is probably what tends to make the biggest impression with folks. And I would imagine, given your experience, you probably have way more than you could fit into just one book. So I'm assuming you spent some time working through picking and choosing which ones you thought would make the biggest impact.
That's correct. I come to the conclusion, too, of what's the difference between a middle class and a middle class millionaire? And one of the big things is a middle class millionaire has a heart for caring for others. And many times it's that millionaire's mentality that I want to make life better for my children. I start a college fund account for them. I think through kind of what happens if I should die? How will my spouse and children go on? So they buy life insurance. And then we go through the process of, you know, I want a better retirement, or I want my wife and I to have choices. So they start a retirement account. And that's basically a giving mentality. And so they forego the big pickup truck. They forego the $5 Starbucks cup of coffee every day. And they make small sacrifices with a caring heart to make a difference in other people's lives.
Right. Yeah, in this day and age, actually, those small indulgences are getting kind of pricey, actually. So that could add up a lot quicker than most people realize. We did see this kind of strange phenomenon this past year, where we had several folks who have already filed their taxes, and they got bigger refunds than they expected. And then we also had this other group of folks that got back a lot less than they expected, but it was because they got to keep more throughout the year. And they somehow got this notion that they didn't garner any real benefit. What would you say is the strangest part of this particular phenomenon?
I think the strangest part is people don't understand how taxes are paid. And you can pay taxes three different ways. You can pay taxes where it's withheld from your paycheck on a weekly or monthly basis. You can pay quarterly estimated taxes, or you can pay on April 15th, you know, the following year. So it's quite frankly, if you got a big refund, you probably had too much withheld, or you paid too much as far as quarterly estimated tax payments if you're self-employed. If you paid too little, you simply didn't have enough withheld. So it's, you know, I think this refund or having to send in a check, it's basically an end of the year kind of settling up your debts, you know, with your bar. It's a bar bill kind of. So I think, you know, people need to kind of think through, what am I doing? And do you have the correct exemptions filled out when you're with your employer? Are you paying the correct amount on your quarterly estimated tax payments? So I think people need to understand their income taxes before making such statements, to be frank with you.
Right. Well, it certainly didn't help that there were some folks in the media that were kind of trying to push this notion, too. Obviously, we do live in a time where our media has become almost as hyper-politicized as if they were part of the parties themselves, depending on what media outlet it is. But you're absolutely right in so much as it would really be helpful if more people understood, because this part of the taxation process, if you're employed and they're withheld, that part's not that complicated. It should be pretty easy to understand for just about anybody.
Amen to that. You know, we do need to increase the financial literacy throughout our country, because time and time again, you know, people come into the office with 10 or 15% credit card debt. And I said, you know, the best way I can make 10 or 15% on your return on your money is to have you pay off your credit card. And that concept is sometimes very difficult for people to grasp. But once they grasp it, you know, it does make a difference.
Before we get back to some of the more financially based questions that I wanted to ask, what was it that actually motivated you to pursue this as a career?
Well, I started off when I was 12 years old back in the 70s. I had a dozen grass cutting jobs. I got paid $5 per yard. I was making a big $60 per week. In the 1970s, I went out and I bought the coolest Schwinn bike a 12-year-old could have. And after that, I started putting money into the savings account at the bank. My father saw what I was doing, and he said, you know, why don't we buy some stocks with that money? And Dad taught me how to, you know, dividend yields from stocks and return on equity. And when I was in middle school, he had me going to stockholder meetings. And so really from that, my passion grew, you know, for the investment market. And so I did go to college and got a finance and economics degree. But after college, instead of going to business school, I did the CFP program, the Certified Financial Planner, and the Chartered Financial Analyst, just because I had the passion for the business. And it's been a pleasure to work in this business, and it's a pleasure to help others. And that, and when you follow your passion, you know, success will follow you.
Yeah. That's one of those stories where, you know, it really does show where you're coming from. And I think more people need to know about that, because they too might get a little more passionate about their own finances if they understood how they could get a better hold of it. I can't tell you how many times I have conversations with people that just tell me, I just can't do this, I just can't do that. And even and I'm no expert by any means, I don't pretend to be, but I'll say, well, what if you just cut this out twice a week? What if you just cut back on this? And they're like, what? No, I need this. Like, well, then I don't think I can help you then. But, you know, it is one of those situations. All right. I'm sorry.
No. Well, the average American makes $30 an hour, roughly $60,000 a year. I sit down and sort of say, can we save $1 an hour, you know, for a day? Just save $8. And, you know, now can you do that for a week? Can you do that for 6 months? And it's a small incremental step. And then after 6 months, can we do $2 an hour? And, you know, can we do $3 an hour? And I think when you break it down that simple, it becomes attainable goal for people. I love to say, you know, you rub two nickels together and it turns into a dime. You rub a couple dimes together and it turns into a dollar. And long term, when you rub dollars together, it just makes good sense for people. And I think we need to break it down, because when you hear the word millionaire, that seems like such a lofty goal. But just when I started out cutting grass, it was to save $100 first. And then we had the mentality to save $10,000. And then we had the mentality to save, you know, $25,000. And I think eventually that's how you get, you know, to be that middle class millionaire. Over 50% of the people that win the lotteries, you know, more than $1 million, declare bankruptcy within 5 years, because they never went through those incremental steps of saving their first $1,000 or saving up to $10,000. It's almost like going from kindergarten to graduate school. You know, they don't go through that intermediate steps that you need to have as far as the mental challenge of going from each step to become that middle-class millionaire.
Yeah. All right. Some specific questions this particular year and years upcoming. First of all, if at this point you have not filed, I hope you have at least filed your extension. But other than that, though, what are the three biggest changes, particularly for middle-class taxpayers, and how are they going to be able to take advantage of those?
Well, one of the biggest changes is the changes of the child-dependent deduction. It's turned from a child-dependent deduction to a child-dependent credit. A credit's a dollar-for-dollar savings on your taxes. So that's a huge difference, and it will be anywhere between $1,000 to $3,000 of a credit, depending upon your income. I think also, you know, the other big thing is the standard deductions. Standard deduction's gone up to $12,200 for an individual, $24,400 for a couple, meaning in the past, many individuals that itemized their deductions added up their state income taxes, their property taxes, their mortgage interest, charitable deductions. Now, if that does not add up to $24,000, you want to take the standard deduction. So I think that's the big difference. So you had many people who did itemized deductions now just simply did the standard deductions in 2018. The other thing that kind of, with that in mind, if you lose the charitable deductions, there's a way that you can keep on giving to charities. And I found middle-class millionaires are generous donors to charities in general is you can either bunch your deductions. So maybe if you get $5,000 per year, you bunch it together. You use a donor advised funds. You might want to set aside $25,000 and give that five, and then you can give it out to the charity $5,000 a year for 5 years. Or another way to do it too, if you're a retiree and you have an IRA account, you can do a qualified charitable deduction, and that comes straight off your distribution requirements from an IRA, and that can go directly to your charity. So I just fed you four top issues instead of three, but all of them are kind of useful strategies that someone would use differently in 2018 versus 17.
Right. Those are all important things to keep in mind, because it really does represent some changes for a lot of folks that fall into the middle class. As far as charitable deductions are concerned, considering that enunciation is important, do you find a higher interest or a more passion, if you will, about the deductions among the middle class than, say, the more wealthy? Because I have kind of a working theory that while the wealthy can afford to do more and probably give larger numbers, that there is a stronger dedication by middle class to charity because they feel closer to the charities that that they tend to give to. Have you witnessed something along those lines, or am I just seeing shadows over here?
I'll tell you an interesting statistic. I met someone who worked for the Salvation Army on a worldwide basis, and he basically said, on average, Americans give three times as much as any other country in the world, and that basically Americans are generous givers to charities. And I've done some personal fundraising for various charities. You know, just like anything, you get 80% of your money from 20% of the people. But it is good, and I come back, it's more the mentality that the middle-class millionaire and that people who are going to become middle-class millionaires, they have a giving heart, and they do care about the charities, and they do care about other people. Bernie Sanders released his tax returns today. It was very interesting. Made $560,000. What was very interesting, he gave only $19,000 of that, about 3.4% to charities. He's 77 years old, and he took zero distributions from his IRA account, meaning he had never contributed to a retirement account, or he surely had no money coming out of his IRA. He had zero dividend income, so he doesn't own any stocks at all. And he only had $360 in interest income, so that tells me he must only have about, $20,000-$25,000 in a savings account somewhere. Basically, he received all of his money from basically the book royalties from the books that he sold. So that was kind of a very interesting statistic, a little bit off the topic of what you asked me about, but I thought it was interesting because I reviewed his tax returns this morning.
Oh, yeah, I think it is kind of interesting to look at people who are running for president and who have these grand economic plans to kind of see how they do manage their own money and see how much you can really trust them to be the chief executive of the country, because that's kind of, at least constitutionally speaking, a big part of the job. You're supposed to lay out the budget, and then Congress is supposed to vote on it. All right. What would you say is some of the more, I guess, kind of a slap in the face kind of thing for folks in certain states like California, Maryland, people who are losing some previously large deductions? Do you see this being a massive effect moving forward? And what do you think is some of the biggest impacts from those changes?
Well, I think the big – you bring up a good point. The big changes, too, in the tax law is that we only have we're limited to $10,000 state income and state property tax deduction. So many of the high income tax states, such as Maryland, California, New Jersey, people are losing those deductions that they paid to the state of Maryland and California and New Jersey. And they're looking at the possibility of moving to states like Texas and South Dakota and Florida that have no state income taxes. I think it's a wake-up call for these states, the high income, because, you know, wealthy people will think about moving to other states. You can, you know, through call forwarding, you know, you can own a business in California and be a resident of Texas and reside in Texas. And, you know, the travel costs between California and Texas and the travel costs between New York and Florida is relatively inexpensive. And I think the states need to, quite frankly, look at how they're taxing their residents. We do need to have municipalities be able to tax their residents to pay for schools and roads and to keep to maintain the quality of life. But I think moving forward, they're going to have to tax it in different ways versus just income tax.
Yeah. Yeah, I also tend to think that this puts a lot of pressure on the nature of politics within those states, because sooner or later, politicians are either going to have to realize that they have to start prioritizing a little differently, or the people may just need to learn to vote in a way they haven't necessarily voted in the past, start looking for candidates that are willing to address those things. Obviously, we have already run up for it's almost 20 minutes now, so I want to thank you very much, Clark, for coming on with us tonight. And real quick, I want you to give everybody a little more information so that they can follow up, that they can find you. So share any websites. If you invite people to follow you on social media, feel free to share that too. And let them know where they can find the book, and maybe even if pre-order is already available, let them know where they could might be able to do that as well.
Well, Tim Tapp, thanks for having me on your show. You can visit KindleCapital.com. We do have an e-newsletter that we charge nothing for you to participate. We do have a blog post, a video post on various topics. And, of course, we have a landing page where you can that will link you directly to our book at KindleCapital.com. And the book is Middle Class Millionaire, Surprising Simplest Strategies to Grow and Enjoy Your Wealth.
All right. Once again, thank you, Mr. Clark. I certainly appreciate it. Mr. Kindle, I just want to – I keep looking at my notes here, and I keep saying Kindle Capital, and I just want to call you Kindle instead of Clark. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you again. It's been an honor to be on your show.
All right, thank you, sir. The honor was mine, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk again soon. And I promise I will get Clark Kindle correct, sir. I promise.
Oh, that's fine. Take care.
You too. Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have Clark Kindle. I'm sure I keep looking at my notes here, and it's like I keep seeing the Kindle Capital first. Because I have a link to Kindle Capital in the show description here, and I have a link to the Amazon listing for Middle Class Millionaire as well, which I tend to do that in the show descriptions. But because of how the color is different here, it keeps drawing my eye, and for whatever reason, I don't know why I kept doing that. I'm normally much better about that kind of thing. But anyway, Clark Kindle, founder of Kindle Capital, and the author of the upcoming book, Middle Class Millionaire. You may be right, COG. You may be right. Anyway, I am going to continue probably about 8 minutes after the normal shutdown time, so that I'll have about an hour's worth of time for the folks in Utah. So if you guys want to hang out with me much longer, I would certainly invite you to hang on for the ride, even if it means you have to call in and listen. If you can't, if you got stuff to do, I understand it is getting a little late here in the Eastern time zone. And, you know, most of us have lives. Some of you are not in the Eastern time zone. In fact, a couple of you guys hanging out in the chat room are in a very different time zone. I think Kel's still in the Eastern, if I'm not mistaken, at least Central, if not. But anyway, that being said, let me try to get my bearings back. I can't believe that. I don't think I have ever done that with a guest before. I've been doing this guest thing for a while now. Stuff like this keeps happening, though. Right about the time I think I'm getting really good at an aspect of this, I have one of these nights. First the late start, and then this. Anyway, here's that story I really wanted to talk about. And we'll see how deep into it I can get, because it's just insane. We have an Ohio Democrat that drafted an amendment to the heartbeat bill seeking to make black babies exempt from the pro-life law. Female Democrat state representative, Representative Boyd, drafted an amendment last week seeking to have black babies exempted from pro-life legislation that has, of course, been dubbed the heartbeat bill, which bars babies with detectable heartbeats, which is, you know, somewhere around 6 weeks, from being killed via abortion. Boyd said the bill, quote, would have given an exemption to African-American women to abort their unborn babies for any reason up to the state's current abortion limit of 20 weeks. Ironically, Representative Boyd, and here's the part that really kind of pissed me off, because before I thought it was just really odd. Why just black babies? But, you know, being that Representative Boyd happens to be black, happens to be female, happens to be a Democrat, I guess we should just be glad that she's not looking for an exemption that lasts all the way up to birth. I do have a picture of the state representative in the slideshow, assuming that it's working correctly and you guys have looked at it. But the part that really got me is that she then likened these restrictions on abortion to, you guessed it, slavery. She indicated that taking away a black woman's right to yank a living being out of her uterus is just like being a slave. She did this the whole time that she was urging her fellow lawmakers to support her measure, to jump on the bandwagon. Here's a quote. Black slaves were once treated like cattle and put out to stud in order to create generations of more slaves. Our country is not far enough beyond our history to legislate as if it is. Now, first of all, I want to say that thankfully Amendment 0291 failed and maybe I should give up. Tonight is not a night for me to be talking. Thankfully, Amendment 0291 failed. And the heartbeat bill was, in fact, signed by the Republican governor, Mr. Mike DeWine. That happened this last Friday. Former Planned Parenthood executive turned pro-life advocate Abby Johnson, who we've talked about on multiple occasions here, ripped Boyd's targeted amendment, snarking that apparently a 36% national abortion rate to the African-American community isn't enough. I don't even know that you can generally call that snark. I think that is just a simple statement, kind of along the lines of something that Candace Owens said not too long ago in regards to how does she feel being one of few black people at many of the conservative events that she goes to. And her remark was, well, it may surprise you, but black Americans still make up roughly about 12 to 13% of this nation. And it's right about 13 right now. So maybe if we stopped aborting more black babies that are being born, you might see a whole lot more of us in places like this. That sounds like a little bit of snark, but you know what? There's a lot of truth to that, too. Now, I want to go back to the representative's statement. Black slaves were once treated like cattle and put out to stud in order to create generations of more slaves. Yes, that did happen. And it was just as every bit as bad as any other part of being treated like property. In fact, probably even worse, because there was a lot of occasions where this kind of pairing was less than, well, let's just say that consent wasn't involved very often, as in never. And it's horrible. But for her to make the statement that our country is not far enough beyond our history to legislate as if it is, I have a problem with that. I have a real problem with that. And my problem is this. We have done more as an individual nation to try to end slavery, not only within our own borders, but around the world, than any other nation, period. We have done more to offer up, we've done more to offer up solutions and apologies and reparations. We have offered citizenship. We have bent over backwards. We have an accepting, open culture. We have embraced interracial couples. We have embraced interracial marriages. We have embraced interracial children. Our nation had, in fact, moved very far past the race riots of the 60s and the early 70s. We've moved far beyond the need for such things like affirmative action. And we were getting to a nice, warm, comfy, cozy place until Barack Hussein. Can't play the show. What? Sorry, looking in the chat room, and I guess you guys just can't hear me anymore. Well, guys, like I said, Chief, if you want to let them know, they can call to listen to the remainder. That's probably about the only way they're going to be able to. Otherwise, tell them I said bye. Hey, look, there's a picture of me. Why is COG sharing a picture of me? I don't know. But anyway, I'm being diverted. I need to finish because I still only have a few minutes left anyway. And you know, we have moved. And, you know, we had this whole new reemergence of racial tension. That was a result of Barack Obama's policies. COG shared a picture of me in the chat room. And then Chief says, "You ain't ugly. You mighty ugly." sheesh. Thanks, Chief. Anyway, it's just such an absurd concept, such an absurd notion. It's so unbelievable that anybody would even say something like this. But it still goes back to this victim mentality. And I'm sorry, I've yet to figure out exactly how that's a justification for still wanting to kill your babies. And here's the thing. She's going to go back to her constituents, and she's going to act like she's fighting for them, fighting for their right to choose, understanding that we're just a bunch of poor people and that's why we can't afford any more children. Never mind the fact that we're not even about to broach the topic of personal responsibility. Never mind the fact that we're not about to broach the topic of how you can prevent unwanted pregnancies. Never mind the fact that we're not about to broach the topic of not engaging in risky behaviors if you are not prepared for the consequences, which actually is all kind of the exact same thing. Just in case you need me to wrap that together for you. I know most of the guys who listen here on a regular basis, you don't need that. But in case you just accidentally came across the show, maybe you do. It's all the same thing here. This is personal responsibility 101. She's going to go back and pretend like this is a fight for her constituents. And what's really tragic is there are going to be people back in her home district that are going to applaud her effort on this. They're going to appreciate the fact that she was fighting for their right not to have no more babies. Mind-boggling, to say the least. It's mind-numbing to say more. But it is the circumstances in which we currently exist in this wonderful nation we are. Now, this happened in Ohio, and of course, that's Mary's home state. Mary's not with us this evening. And of course, Tuesdays is a point in time where she's usually listening to other shows anyway. So happy to have had Mary join us this past Sunday. Been a while, missed her. But let me thank Clark Kendall. I about did it again, guys. I just about did. What is it with me tonight? I want to thank Clark Kendall for joining us. I definitely want to thank Kel, the Infidel Fox, and Chief, host of Simple Facts of Life, and our science advisor, also known as COG, Child of God, for hanging out with me in the chat room. And if you're listening to the show and you've made it all the way to the end, I want to thank you too, no matter where you're listening at, whether it's right here at the BTR home platform or over at Spreaker or at iTunes or iHeartRadio or Spotify or wherever. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I really do. And in the meanwhile, let me go ahead and play the Edwards Notebook and then the Songs and Stories Soldiers Songs and Stories for Soldiers and Veterans Tip of the Day. Now I'm trying to mess that up too. Jeez. Blah, 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 blah. Tongue-tied I am. And then after that, I will say adieu. So let me say this part now. Whatever else you do, don't take my word for it, especially tonight. Don't take my word for it. But definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in at least a little bit of effort. I know it's hard, but you can do it, trust me. More importantly, be prepared to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. I'm out, everybody. Stay around for the Edwards Notebook and the Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day, and come back again tomorrow. I'm out.
Once again, government school bullies seek to trample on parental rights. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, because of the abysmal quality of government school education, many parents across America have opted to homeschool their children. Homeschooled students traditionally benefit from a superior education and are not indoctrinated against America, God, or free market economics. So, parents in West Virginia are hoping that West Virginia Education Chair Representative Kenneth Mann, a Republican, and his Democrat cohorts, Senators Michael Romano and Ron Stallings, who proposed a law that would prohibit homeschooling and order CPS investigations if parents who had children who accrued 10 absences fails. In fact, the bill would treat homeschooling as abuse in order to increase government control over the decision-making process concerning where West Virginia students go to school, leaving parents out in the cold. This is yet another statist government official attempt to see how much more will sovereign citizens allow them to push forward with their evil agenda to indoctrinate all students. Thus, it is past time for parents en masse to stand up for their unalienable right to seek the best way to train up their children and the way they should go. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on AmericaMatters.us.
Dan Perkins here for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. The VA recently reported that 70% of all veteran suicides are by vets who have never been to the VA. There's a saying, when a person's name is written down where people can see it, that person will never be forgotten. Many of our veterans, past and present, feel that nobody cares about them. We will be holding the first Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Memorial Tournament. All of the proceeds will go to purchase MP3 players for veterans. I know that veterans and their families all over the country will hear this announcement and not be able to play at the golf outing, but want to help. So here's your veteran's tip of the day. If you have a family member or a friend that is a veteran, for $100 you can honor them and make sure they will never be forgotten. Go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and sponsor a tea or a green in their name. Keep their memory alive. This has been your veteran's tip of the day.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family.
Using both.